So short of a product endorsement, let's talk about the science of shoes now. Is there one right shoe design for all runners, or is there too many variables?
Probably the best thing is all the variables they've addressed now. Like, it's not one size fits all, and I guess in a cliche sense, but there are shoes made for individual problems, such as people that what we call pronators, they tend to have too much motion or hypermobility in their feet. There are shoes made for more rigid foot types that don't bend easy. And this whole barefoot running, there are shoes that are made for people who run more up on their toes and their heels. So it has evolved. It's become quite a science now.
Speak more specifically to this barefoot running phenomenon.
I thought it was a fad, be honest with you. The gentleman who came out with the book kind of stimulated a lot of interest in it and
sold a lot of books.
It sold a lot of books and sold a lot of strange-looking shoes that look like fingers or toes. But what happened, it was pretty much proven that people still run on their heels. It's hard to train someone. Studies show that I've looked at that in a marathon, more than three-quarters of the people still run on their heels. A heel striker versus a four-foot striker. And the whole idea of barefoot running was to hit more on the ball of your foot, not quite sprinting, not up on your toes. But it just seemed like, again, it wasn't for everyone. So
this isn't a marathon, but a 10-mile run's pretty legitimate. What percent of runners at the completion don't need to see a podiatrist?
I'll even use Boston maybe as a reference point, because the same amount of time spent there, 30 years, I'd say you're looking at maybe 1,000 to 2,000 out of that number of 20,000 that will come visit the medical tent. Many people are their own doctors. They'll take care of their own problems. But the ones that really need us, I would say a good, say, 1,000 out of 20,000. I mean, that sounds like a small amount, but
It's 5%.
It's still enough.
Inordinately blisters, I would presume.
Right. It keeps us busy, that's for sure.
What are some of the more unusual situations, though, that you've encountered?
Things more soft tissue injury, like people that have developed stress fractures, or they were on the verge of an injury before they started, and certainly after they ran 10 miles, 25, 26 miles, they end up having more serious problems.
The forecast is pretty great for this Sunday morning, but I imagine over these years you've been out in rain and cold and all sorts of situations. What impact can that have on running and weather and the feet specifically?
Right. We've seen mostly heat is our biggest enemy, heat. You can almost plot the amount of injuries with heat, with the temperature rise. The higher the temperature, you're definitely going to see more foot problems. For instance, I'll reference back to Boston this year. We were there at the marathon with the same team, or a new team, but the same idea. Today, it was an easy year because it was cool, rainy, so we had more like minor blisters, nothing. But when the heat goes up, when the temperatures are up in the 80s like they were in 2012, then we'll see many more problems.
As you've cited the Boston Marathon now, I need to ask, were you there 2 years ago?
Yes, I was, with a team of students.
Near the finish line?
Yes, we were there. I would say we were part of the story. We were in the tent. We had to do it. We did what everybody was doing, and there we're taking care of those.
Can you take a moment and tell part of that story?
It's kind of hard to talk about still. I mean, it's been a long haul to get past it, but it was quite a day. It was the perfect running day, in fact.
You certainly didn't go there anticipating being part of the first responder team.
I hate to say now, it's kind of been my reference point now. Any day at Boston will be a good day, if you know, in comparison to what happened. Like this year was like a joy. It was like a joy to be there. Last year was like a victory to be there, you know, to come back a year after and return to our work. But it was a war. I mean, what we saw in that tent and some of the things beyond description, nobody in my 30 years have never. I'm not a trauma hospital person, but certainly even in those conditions, amputation, I mean, how more horrible can you get? And just...
You were at a war scene.
That's how what else could you could compare, you know, within minutes, within 5 to 10 minutes of the blast, patients were coming through that tent in all kinds of problems. I mean, shrapnel wounds, penetration of you could see where the BBs and the ball bearings and the nails have penetrated.
And in response, the Broad Street run and presumably most other runs have taken security precautions.
It's changed the face of it for sure.
How so?
Well, no more backpacks. We always loved our backpacks. Like, you're carrying a bag there. I always carry it, so convenient to sling something on your shoulder, but everything must be plastic, see-through. You're going through metal detectors. You're going through, you're like almost airport security. So in that sense, it's changed. Don't be alarmed if a dog starts sniffing around your bags and around the area. They'll make sweeps through the medical tent.
Given your tenure and experience, it seems like you were at the start of when the term sports medicine came into vogue.
Well, pretty close to it. I started competing in the 70s. I tried out for the 72 Olympic team, and that was the year Frank Shorter won the marathon, and that was kind of given the title the birth of the running boom. Has it slowed down? No. If somebody said the running boom was dead, how can you explain 40,000 people wanting to run Broad Street and 30,040 running New York? So it's certainly not dead. It's almost like a rebirth, new discovery. It's never really slowed down.